All right, Alexander, we are joined by Mats Nilsson, first time on the Duran, and we're very happy, very honored to have him with us. Mats, where can people follow your work? What's the best place for people to follow you?
I would say my main platform form for, I think, over about 15, 16 or 15 years now is X, or former Twitter, where it's just my handle and name is at Mats Nilsson. And that's where I do most of my work. And if I do it elsewhere, I always link it on X. And also on the Dissident Club of Sweden, which is easily searched and found, which is just a group of dissidents here in Sweden who try to counter the mainstream media agenda in Sweden, which, of course, is a work for Sisyphus. But you can't not do it, as both of you know. Since it's what you do every day as well on a global stage, we try to do it in Sweden.
Fantastic. Ed and I follow Mats, and I suggest everyone follows him on X. I will have those links in the description box down below and as a pinned comment. So Alexander, Mats, let's talk about Sweden. We had a NATO foreign ministers conference, I believe is what it was, and you guys can get into the details.
Indeed, let's do so. Let's go straight in. And can I say, first of all, it's a great honor to have you, Mats, on our program. And I hope we will have you many times again, if you don't mind, not just to talk about the topics we're going to talk about today, but also about Sweden itself, an enormously important country, which has taken, for me, a surprising course. So NATO meeting in Sweden, foreign ministers meeting in Sweden. Once upon a time, not so long ago, I would have thought that was inconceivable, the idea of a NATO meeting in Sweden. But that is what we had. And you have been fairly close to the ground and listening to what was happening. Do you want to tell us a few of the things that you've learned?
Well, looking at the history of Sweden, I think quite few of us even could contemplate the fact that we today would be in a situation where we actually hosted a top NATO summit in the south of Sweden. And this is something that's been ongoing, and something that is the culmination of a Swedish endeavor to be the best in the class in whatever we do. And by that, I mean Secretary Rubio, which attended the meeting, lauded Sweden as being a top-notch member of NATO. Now, this is where it gets interesting, because you see, there was a dual strategy on behalf of Sweden when it came to this NATO meeting. The Swedish foreign minister, Maria Malmer Stenergard, publicly aligned with the European allies at the NATO meeting in Helsingborg. And when I mean aligned, she kind of distanced herself from the current American administration on regards to Greenland and Iran and such things. However, and this is where it gets interesting, she bound Sweden to a US-led framework outside of the NATO and European consensus. And by this, I mean that Sweden joined the Pax Silica about 2 months ago, which Sweden is the first EU member state to do. So we don't really know how this is even going to play out. And secondly, during the NATO summit, we also signed the Technology Prosperity Deal, further deepening Sweden and US bilateral tech ties. And when I mean tech ties, I obviously mean technology closely linked to the military industrial complex. So this is the way I see it, a sequence of events where Sweden is once again, in order to be top of its class, sidestepping the European Union to secure a privileged position, potentially even weakening European leverage and solidarity in the process, in order to please one of the great power brokers globally, but definitely in Sweden. And here I'm referring to the Wallenberg family, which owned the two companies who have the most to gain from this deal. I mean here Ericsson and also Saab. Secretary Rubio even mentioned Ericsson telecommunication company by name in one of the quick doorstep interviews he gave in Helsingborg last week. So as you can see, this endeavor locks Sweden into a very rigid US strategy. And I can't really for the life of me understand what good it would do will do me as an EU citizen. But there you have it. Sweden is kind of playing both sides. It's trying to be a loyal European Union member, and at the same time, so eagerly wanting to please the US current government. So it's a situation which might not be clear to everyone, but which I, as a Swede who have been following this for many years now, see as surprising, and I'm disappointed, but I can not I cannot totally write it off, because it's always the Wallenbergs who kind of run Swedish policy when it comes to these matters of industrial geopolitical strategy.
Can you explain to our viewers who the Wallenbergs are? I mean, I know a bit about them, and I know about their role in Swedish life going back, well, for a very long time. But I think there is a perception amongst many people, again, it's a legacy of the image of Sweden as this social democratic country that is very egalitarian, and that, you know, power is very dispersed, and that, you know, that there's, you know, that there isn't a sort of dominant group of people like the Wallenbergs are. So can you tell us a little bit about them? Because it's something that I find outside Sweden, very few people know.
Yes, of course, I can. It's Sweden has been very good in marketing itself. We have marketed ourselves, as still do, as one of those wonderful kind of a socialist paradise where everyone is happy and it's a cradle to grave security, and we have Astrid Lindgren and we have Pippi Longstocking, all the rest of it. However, there's always been a situation since, I would say, the 1920s, 1930s, where there have been a very strong family connection between families of industry and the Swedish governments, no matter if it has been a so-called socialist government or not. And one of the most powerful families here is the Wallenberg family. And its influence, it goes back to the 1920s. And during the Second World War is really when it started to go up. It's a banking family by trade. There were two brothers during the Second World War. And one brother was basically working with the Americans and the British. And the other brother was placed in Germany. So this family dealt with both sides. And of course, the brother that was placed in Germany was given a slap on the wrists after the war, but nothing much came of it because the Wallenbergs had made themselves indispensable. It's the classic all wars are bankers' wars, and the Wallenbergs were very good at using this situation. So today, their influence operates through an investment company called Investor, and its many foundations holding significant stakes in both Ericsson and Saab among them. And Marcus Wallenberg is the chairman of Saab, and he kind of personifies this link. And in a recent interview, he spoke of building industrial partnerships with a very, very long-term mindset. And this is how the Wallenberg family works. It's a long-term strategy. So there is a, you can say there's a 30-year linkage between the Wallenberg also and the current situation. They're on public record showing the influence, how they have exercised it through strategic long-term investments and board memberships. So they also established something called the Nordic Compass, which is an industrial alliance, including Saab, Ericsson, and others in the north, in the Nordic and Baltic countries, aimed at strengthening defense cooperation and deep tech competitiveness, a move that kind of cements their central role in this area. Of course, the Nordic Compass is only a formal reason to help militarize the Arctic, but they want the profits from this. So thereby, the Wallenberg family is a classic military-industrial banker's family, but they have been highly successful since they have been working out of Sweden, meaning that for many years during the Cold War, they were allowed to work with everyone, because then they worked under the umbrella of neutrality. Now that we're no longer under even the, we're not even assumed to be neutral anymore, they have to firmly align themselves with the Washington agenda in order to keep Ericsson and Saab profitable. And there you have these new signed agreements. So that's basically the Wallenberg working close with the Swedish government, and is in part the reason for Sweden being such a top-notch NATO member these days.
So, in fact, there is a misconception that many people have that it was the United States that persuaded Sweden to change its policy, to put neutrality behind it, to join NATO. There have been very powerful forces within Sweden itself. I mean, not everyone in Sweden, but some very, very powerful forces in Sweden itself that have wanted to redirect Sweden in that direction.
Yes, yes, of course, it's very true. And four years ago, when all this discussion started, the then social democratic minister got on a plane and hopped over the Baltic to Finland in order to discuss the possibility of Finland and Sweden jointly joining NATO, or at least they were starting and initiating a discussion. Now, guess who was on the plane with the social democratic minister heading off to meet Niinistö in Finland? Obviously, one of the Wallenbergs. They didn't even hide it. It was official. Wallenberg joined the trip to Helsingfors to discuss the future of a possible Swedish-Finnish membership in NATO. Of course, it was already decided by then, but the Social Democratic Party was allowed to go through the official democratic motions before it could be accepted policy. The voters were never asked. It was just a change in the majority in the current parliament, and then we were members by vote in parliament. So as you can see, this is the Helsingborg summit was the culmination of the hard work that the current Swedish right-wing government have been putting into aligning Sweden deeper and deeper into the United States industrial cooperation.
Has anybody in Sweden, or rather I should say, has anybody in the political system in Sweden understood how dangerous potentially this is for Sweden? Because we now have what, at least from London, from the position I am in London, we have now a very deteriorating security situation in the Baltics. We have a situation where the Russians, having had, I think it's fair to say, a wary relationship with Sweden for a long time, but now have come to see Sweden as an outright enemy, where we're starting to see military build-ups by everybody in the Baltics, where we have drones moving around the Baltics. I understand some of them crossing into Sweden itself, though I'm not absolutely sure about this. You can discuss this. But it seems to me that certain financial, private, economic interests are not identical at all with wider Swedish interests, which would be to enjoy the stability and peace that neutrality formerly gave Sweden.
Quite. The description is quite accurate. And Swedish media is, of course, uncritically reporting any claim out of Ukraine as a truth. And there is basically no Swedish politician who is discussing the old concept of diplomacy or mutual agreed security agreements, such as Olof Palme once did here in Sweden. That's left the building. Our current Prime Minister, Ulf Kristersson, in one of the interviews he gave with Mark Rutte in the run-up to the Helsingborg summit, our Prime Minister actually said that NATO should facilitate Ukraine drones getting into Russia, basically meaning that they should definitely not be shot down while heading over the Baltics, but that he said we should facilitate drones heading into Russia, which is, of course, a conscious rhetoric of blatant aggression. So there is no political... I'm just thinking if... No, I have to say the only political disagreement stems from the old Communist Party, the left-wing party in Sweden. They have said that they do not want the DCA agreement. And this is the agreement where Sweden has given up sovereignty in order to host 17 American bases. So the only thing that's happened is that the Communist Party has, a former Communist Party, leftist party, has said, we do not want this agreement anymore. That's the only opposition to the current policy of escalation on behalf of Sweden. So right now, Sweden is in very many aspects, a warmongering country. We're getting on a war footing. Every day we see and we read the mainstream media news that we need more war graves. We need more dugouts. We need more improvements of civil defense. We just bought 4 French frigates in order to secure the Swedish Navy potential in the Baltic Sea. Why? I don't know, but it's obviously part of the military-industrial profits once again gaining the upper hand. Sweden is on a war footing, and the Helsingborg summit made that very, very clear. But there is no opposition to this war footing, because the mainstream media is very uncritical in all its reporting.
What about general sentiments amongst the Swedish people? Because, again, Sweden, for most of its recent history, has been a neutral country. It was neutral during the two world wars. It was neutral during the Cold War. To the best of my recollection, that was a widely supported policy across the Swedish public at that time. Is there any sense of regret for the passing of that? Is there any sense amongst the widest Swedish public that, you know, they're being pulled into this confrontation, into this situation of conflict and war, without them being properly consulted or having it explained to them?
Sadly, no. The majority in Sweden are in favor of the NATO membership, and I don't think they have realized the effects of the membership yet. They have not really understood it, perhaps, and especially not the DCA agreement, which was run through Parliament totally under the radar. So, but for all of those who viewed Sweden's historic 200-year policy of non-alignment as a moral force for peace and stability in the Nordic region, I would say that the current deep integration into the US-led tech sphere is a very tragic end to that era, period. It's gone. It's not coming back. So, I mean, we're now on a US-oriented capitalist ride where the arms manufacturers fundamentally are altering Sweden's identity and transforming us from a voice of peace into a potential party to conflict. And since it is still a cold conflict, I think many voters in Sweden can't really, because it's quite a complex process to fathom the consequences of a NATO membership should a hot war erupt. But it was also declared during the Helsingborg summit that Sweden is now part of the staging area. In case of a heightened tensions, Sweden is a staging area. It will be the main staging area for the NATO pushback against Russia, meaning that 60,000 Swedish soldiers will be put into force and all the equipment will basically be stored and held here in Sweden. And anyone can figure out what will happen to those areas where these stores are kept if it comes to a hot war. Russia obviously isn't going to lean back and say, oh, but Sweden, they're such a nice and neutral country. We've been friends for 200 years. Let them just keep those stores. We're not going to destroy the cities surrounding the stores which are kept underneath the cities. Obviously, Sweden is going to get hit hard if a conflict, God forbid, were to erupt. And then I think many Swedish citizens will say, why weren't we told about this? But I mean, what's the point of me and the dissident club in Sweden saying, we told you so? It won't help, especially since there will be many tens of thousands of dead Swedes, soldiers, and unfortunately civilians, if the war were to erupt. So I think it's just a matter of understanding the consequences, because it was never discussed in the media. So therefore, we're still trying to get the people in Sweden to understand the consequences of a war.
Well, Matt, what you say to me, it seems to me that Sweden has moved from being what many people admired as a functioning democracy into one where interests, financial interests, exercise disproportionate power behind the scenes. And from a place which was secure and peaceful to one which is becoming a potential battlefield. Is that a summary of the situation?
It is. It is very much a very good summary. A sad summary, but a very accurate summary. And like I said, add to that the fact that we're tying ourselves into an American market, which is basically not doing that good anyway. And we're locking out Sweden from a Chinese market, potentially. So we're both going to war and our economy is most likely going to suffer from bad industrial policy. So it's not really a good time to be a Swede right now.
Which is very sad for someone like me who does indeed remember how Sweden used to be absolutely a moral force. I can remember it very clearly in the 60s, by the way, and the 70s. But that's the Sweden, apparently, that we're being seen left behind. I hope it comes back. Well, Matt, thank you very, very much for joining us. We will discuss developments in Sweden again, I have no doubt, in future. And in the meantime, can I thank you for your hard work, the hard work you and your dissident club are doing in Sweden, and for putting the word out about what the risks that Sweden currently is running. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Matt. Information to follow Matt is in the description box down below and as a pinned comment as well. Thank you so much for joining us.